If you have an asset that goes up 40% in a year, does that make you happy, nervous, or both? I'm David Brancaccio, just doing some math on the fly here with the live numbers from the NASDAQ market. In early trading, the NASDAQ Composite Index, which runs thick with technology companies, this year is up 42.3%. As we close in on New Year's, let's consult Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors. Hi there.
Good morning.
So you look at the NASDAQ year to date and you see 41-43% increase. I mean, it starts to make a fella nervous, right?
Well, that is a pretty lofty number. And so despite all the issues in the pandemic, we have had a terrific year in the market if you look from the start point to the end point. And certainly, if you put all your money in at the absolute low, that number is even larger. So we have seen some pretty big numbers in returns, the NASDAQ being the most obvious, the S&P up a more reasonable 15%, and the Dow trailing by a long shot for the NASDAQ, up only 6% year to date.
All right, but next year, possibilities of increased regulation for big tech companies. Also, the idea that maybe this vaccine really takes hold and people move away from screens and it can get out in the real world. That could cause a kind of rotation that might take the wind out of something like the NASDAQ.
Well, it certainly could. And we're starting to see some of that rotation already as we see hopes of the vaccine getting out, people resuming normal activity. But surprisingly, what that's done is just boost other indices. So we have seen a lot of that cause the boost in the S&P levels. And we've seen the market continue to be enthusiastic about stocks. No one's backing away from continuing to invest and expecting future appreciation.
And what were you telling me about the year before this? Yes, the NASDAQ has gone up more than 40% this year, it looks like. But previous year, there's a lesson there.
Last year, it was up more than 36%. And certainly, if you end a year and you're up over 36%, you have to think about, should I take some gains and just go home? And yet, you would have missed out on an up over 40% year. And so it's a remarkable combination of returns, particularly given the backdrop. It really is surprising, and it's particularly strong. It could indicate that investors just know that the market is going to be the best place to invest when you have this 0% interest rate backdrop that looks to continue for an indefinite amount of time.
Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors. Day early here, but Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
On January the 1st, the oldest millennials turn 40, at least using Pew Research's definition of people born between 1981 and 1996. And under federal law, the oldest millennials can begin suing for age discrimination. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab, millennial, is here. Kristen, people experience discrimination in different ways.
Women are much more likely to experience age discrimination than men. For instance, the Washington Post pointed to a study in the Journal of Political Economy. Researchers sent U.S. employers 40,000 resumes, and by age 50, women were getting significantly fewer responses, while 50-year-old men fared about the same as younger applicants or weren't impacted in the same way. It wasn't until age 65 that both men and women saw a big drop in callbacks.
What's going on here? Stereotypes.
Yeah, I mean, millennials were lazy job hoppers who have had everything handed to us on a silver platter, right? Also, there are lots of assumptions people make about certain age groups, that a woman in her 40s might have kids at home and less time to focus on work, or that older workers are bad with technology.
And the timing of millennials turning 40 at this moment is significant.
We are facing an economic downturn with high levels of unemployment, and research shows age discrimination worsens during these periods. In one study, economists found that a 1% increase in local unemployment led to a 15% drop in callbacks for older women applicants. Because employers get an overwhelming number of applicants, it may be easier to discriminate and harder to prove.
Kristen, thank you. You may be interested in that Washington Post piece delving into the data on this. Okay, Zooming and Peloton bikes are up during pandemic, but so much is down, including the market for fine art, with gallery sales down by more than a third just in the first half of 2020. But sometimes a pause can refresh. Art critic Blake Gopnik is a frequent contributor to the New York Times and author of this year's comprehensive Warhol biography. Thanks for connecting again, Blake.
It's always a pleasure, David.
Now, what is it? Your premise, backed up by fieldwork, that people in the art market are, what, relieved that the pandemic has let the air out of the art market?
Yeah, you know, most industries are obviously terribly troubled by the fact that things are going terribly. You won't find a restaurateur who says, thank God for the pandemic. But weirdly, in the art world, that's kind of what's happening. I mean, earlier this fall, a report came out saying that gallery sales had dropped by something like a third. And I, for one, at least, am kind of happy about it because the art market had gone so crazy in the last 10 or even 20 years that it had lost all sense of reality. And I think a lot of people in the art world, either explicitly or at least secretly, are really happy that this giant correction is happening.
And you're not making the classic financial bubble argument that if prices get too high, they need to come down to something more normal. You're actually, in part, talking about the quality of the art.
Yeah, I think what has people especially upset is that really bad art is selling for a ton. It used to be that you said, this is a work of great art, so it should sell for a lot. And now that's been reversed. Now people say, wow, that sold for a lot. It must be a work of really great art. And that's what I'm objecting to. But it's not just me. All sorts of people I'm talking to in the art world, dealers, people who make their living by buying and selling art, are saying that things have got so crazy that it would be a good thing if there was a massive correction in the art market.
But spare a thought for the struggling artist. If the market is so much reduced by pandemic, what would have sold higher is selling lower. That's not going to help the artist.
You know, the big problem is that this crazy art market has helped a tiny, tiny number of artists, many of whom are vastly mediocre, but it hasn't done any good for your average mid-career artist. In fact, quite the opposite. They're the ones who've been slammed. You know, billionaires are willing to buy really splashy work that looks good over the sofa, and that's really what they're buying. But they're not buying, you know, the mid-career video artist who's been struggling to make really interesting work. I mean, one of the big problems is that really mediocre painting, what some people are calling zombie abstraction, that is kind of abstraction from the past that's come back to life. It's pretty stuff, it's decorative, but it has no real depth. That's what's fetching the really big money.
Art critic Blake Gopnik is a frequent contributor to the New York Times, for instance, and author of Warhol, a comprehensive biography of the artist. I'm a third the way through, a rip-roaring read, seriously. Blake, thank you.
It's been great to do this.
You can also read Blake's essay detailing his fieldwork on the art market reset. Marketplace.org has his piece. I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report, from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.